Alrighty. Okay, it started.
Thank you.
Okay, it's being recorded.
Jack, do you want me to call the order now?
Yes.
Not yet. One more minute?
That's fine.
Okay. So good afternoon. Thank you everyone for joining us. And I would like to call to order the emergency meeting for the Arizona Board of Respiratory Care Examiners. Today is March 3rd and it is 12:04 p.m. And Jack, if you could do a roll call of the attendees we have on here, I think that would make it easier than everyone trying to talk over each other.
Very good. So, Dr. Leslie Easley. Not present at the beginning of the meeting. Board Member Beller.
Present.
Board Member Rainier.
Here.
Board Member Gonzalez. Not present at the beginning of the meeting. Vice Chairman Crawford.
Present.
And Chairman Kagan. So we have four members present. That is a quorum. We can start the meeting. Just briefly, I want to make a quick announcement. Please remember that we're going to be talking about confidential patient records today. So if there's any references to patients, please use initials so that we are not disclosing names during the public meeting. I would like to ask if RCP Herrera is present.
I'm here.
Is your attorney present also, RCP Herrera?
Is attorney. Repeat that?
Sure. I was asking if your attorney was also present. RCP Herrera, are you hearing me okay?
Yes, she should be on this call.
Okay, is RCP Herrera's attorney present?
I apologize, I was on mute and I didn't realize it. Yes, this is Cynthia Pittain.
Thank you very much for that introduction. Is RCP Walker present?
I'm present.
And is your attorney here also?
Yes, Yes, this is Cynthia Pittain. I represent both Ms. Walker and Ms. Herrera.
Very good. Thank you very much. Let me get my computer organized here.
Is there anybody else on this call that has not been announced yet?
Members of the public that are here. I don't know that we necessarily need to announce them.
Okay, just that we have some.
Yes.
Okay.
The board's attorney, Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan, is also on the call.
Thank you, Seamus. Jack, and I'm Jack Conn for Executive Director. Kathy?
Okay.
Can you introduce yourself, please?
Oh, sorry. Kathy Stone, Licensing Administrator.
Rachel, introduce yourself, please.
Rachel Fowkes, Administrative Secretary.
Okay, thank you. And I am trying to pull up my materials, and it's being difficult for some reason. Okay, Madam Chair, would you like me to go through the report?
I'm sorry, would I like you to? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Okay, I have here today to discuss two different respiratory therapists. The first one name is Pearl Herrera. She holds license number 009862. RCP Herrera was originally licensed with us on November 19th of 2010. That license is set to expire December 31st of 2022. RCP Herrera does not have any complaint history, and I did not find any criminal history when I searched public information. The second RT that we have on the agenda is Sandra L. Walker, holds license number 032998. That license was originally issued January 22nd of 2019 and is set to expire on October 10th of 2022. Point history, no criminal record found when I searched. I'm going to read the summaries for both, and then the board can decide which way it wants to go as far as hearing from the respiratory therapists and their attorneys in which order, and we can go to discussion after that if that's okay.
Okay.
At issue today, RCP Herrera is a respiratory manager at Montecito Post Acute Care and Rehabilitation Center. RCP Herrera supervises RCP Walker, as well as other preceptors at that location and students that are on clinical rotations from medical institute. RCP Walker was supervising a respiratory student and allowed that student to remove a patient from a vent without direct supervision. That patient subsequently expired under the allegation that her cuff was not properly deflated. The allegation that came into the board states that we received an online complaint on February 17th of 2021 against RCP Herrera stating an incident at Montecito Post Acute Care Rehabilitation Center at 48th Street in Mesa occurred on February 16th of 2021. RCP Walker was the day staff, was assigned a respiratory student by the name, was assigned a respiratory student. RCP Walker told the respiratory student that she could take the vent off of a vented patient as ordered. The respiratory student was not to remove the female patient from the ventilator without supervision. After some time, physical therapy found the same patient blue and unresponsive. A code was called, patient died. While coding, the patient staff noticed that the respiratory student neglected to deflate the cuff in the patient's trach tube, ultimately causing the patient to suffocate to death. That is essentially the common thread and the common allegation in this matter. My reports also allege possible violations of statute and rule. I don't have anything further unless there's questions from the board. Chairman Kagan, you can have your summaries from the two respiratory therapists that are here or have their attorneys speak to the board.
Okay, thank you. So I guess I will put that to the two therapists who are here. And I guess from Sandra, I'd like to hear first from either Sandra or her attorney.
Hi, this is Cynthia Pachin, and I'm prepared to give an explanation to the board or an introductory statement on behalf of both Sandra Walker and Pearl Herrera. And I can do so at this time if that's permitted.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I'm assuming you can hear me okay?
We can, yes.
Okay, great. All right. You know, this allegation that was received by the board is from one complainant who asserts that the cuff was left inflated and eventually led to this code. And I understand that's what you're considering today to determine whether to summarily suspend the licenses of Ms. Walker and Ms. Herrera. And I would urge you to look at the records if you haven't done so already, which I am sure you have given the seriousness of the situation. But given that there are so many records in the case, I thought it might be helpful to point out some of the key records and the key facts that really point away from that this occurred here and that the cause of this patient's code was a cuff having been left inflated. this matter or this event occurred on February 16th, so not that long ago, at Montecito Post Acute Care. And Sandra Walker was a respiratory therapist who was supervising a student that day. And the student took a few of the patients from the schedule in consulting with Sandra Walker. And one of those patients was on a vent, and she did remove her from the vent and place her on the trachea around 7:40 that morning. This patient had been in the process of being weaned from the vent for the last 7 or so days. It began on February 9th, the weaning process. So she was on the vent at night and trach during the day. So that's the background. And one of the important facts that is pretty persuasive that a cuff was not left inflated here is the timeline of events. And the timeline of events is documented not only in the respiratory therapy flow sheet, which is page number, I think you have these page numbers. It's MONEMR005-06. That's the respiratory flow sheet for the date of 2/16. And it is also, this timeline is also set forth in the progress note for this date that is labeled MONEMR0111-2. And the timeline is that the respiratory therapy student was providing care at 7:30. At 7:40, a nurse came into the room to give meds, and she observed the student providing suctioning. At between 7:45 and 7:50, at the end of the student's care, she brought Sandra the vitals, and those are recorded in the chart as O2 sats 95%, heart rate 76, and respiratory rate 16. The vitals are recorded not only on the respiratory flow sheet for that day, but they are also recorded in the assignment sheet, a handwritten assignment sheet that was provided to the board within the records. So they're noted in two different places. It would seem to me, and I think to you as well, that you would expect for those vital signs to be abnormal if the cuff has been inflated and left inflated under the circumstances for 10 to 15 minutes while the student was providing care. Another really important fact that I think the board should consider is that there was a nurse who came into the room during this time period and did not observe the patient in any distress. And one would expect a great deal of distress and panic in her facial expressions, and also her vitals would reflect that if the cuff had been left inflated. A third very important fact is that both Ms. Herrera and Ms. Walker observed the patient's color when a code was eventually called at 8:40. And I should back up and give you that timeline as well. The respiratory therapy care ended around 7:50, and around 8:40 in the morning, physical therapy went into the room to provide care and noticed that the patient was not responsive and not breathing, and a code was called. So at 8:40, a code was called. When Ms. Walker and Ms. Herrera responded to the code, they both noticed that the patient was not blue, that she was pink and warm. And that's a very important fact that points away from the cuff having been left inflated and suffocating this patient. And a final fact, and I'm sure there's others, but one of the most important facts is that following the code, there were interviews, informal interviews with the people who were present and the nurse and other healthcare professionals. And one of the nurses said that she went into the patient's room between 7:50 and 8:40 a.m. and observed the patient sleeping and heard her snoring. It would have been impossible to hear snoring if the cuff had been inflated. Those sounds of snoring indicate that the cuff was actually deflated. There was a student who provided this care, and it's important for you to know that she was 2 days away from completing her clinicals at this time, and she had demonstrated competency not only to the other respiratory therapist, but also her clinical instructor.
And she had removed this patient from the vent the day before, which was February 15th. And that was also done in conjunction with Sandra Walker. So Sandra Walker knew that this patient was competent, and the patient was instructed, if she had any issues, to let Ms. Walker know, which she had done in the past. The student was well known to be not shy about asking for help or direction, and was very eager to learn, and instilled a lot of confidence in people. It shouldn't be assumed that just because of this was a student who provided the care that it was done incorrectly, especially this particular student who had done it successfully the day before. I think it's also important, I know that one of the concerns that was expressed about this situation to us from Mr. Comfort was that there were a number of questions that were asked after the code about whether or not the cuff was deflated or whether it was inflated. And there were a number of respiratory therapists in the room, and it seems that that's why those questions were asked, because the respiratory therapist would naturally think about that given their background. But one of the respiratory therapists at the code was actually instructed to inflate the cuff, indicating that it was in fact deflated at the time the code began. So it seems that based on one allegation or one complainant's allegation that it's reached this level where you all are considering summary suspension. And I understand that, and I think everyone does, that this is very serious. But it would be a rush to judgment to summarily suspend their licenses under these circumstances. And given that their skill sets are not in question here and the care they provided is not in question, it does seem that they are not jeopardizing patient safety or the safety of the public by being allowed to continue to practice. And it's not necessary to summarily suspend their licenses pending the investigation. So that's what our hope is today, is that after continuing to look at these records and gather the information, you'll see that there's no need for summary suspension today, and the investigation could safely play out, and it will conclude that there was no wrongdoing here. But that's our request for today. And I know that both of the therapists are available to answer your questions and for further comment, if that's helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I do think the timeline is very important here, and either the attorney or Jack can maybe help. In the beginning, there were some page numbers mentioned where respiratory charting was identified. If we could have those again.
Madam Chair, members of the board, The timeline that I found during reviewing the records was the assignment sheet that RCP Walker and the student had used to complete, I believe it was the first round. I think that starts on page 274. And RCP Walker may be better able to describe how she documents and how she notes.
Okay.
This is Vice Chairman Crawford. Page 274 appears to be daily activities of daily living documentation.
I have my page 274 starts at the top with respiratory therapy assignment. It has a handwritten Sandra RT on the top right hand side. The date is 2/16.
This is Cynthia Patain, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but this could be helpful. There are a few different sets of the records that were that are initially marked with different page numbers, and there's one set that is labeled MON00014 and 15, and those are the assignment sheets. The The other page numbers are very similar, but are a little, just a little different. The other, the bulk of the other records are labeled M-O-N-E-M-R before the number. This particular assignment sheet doesn't have that EMR in the page number, if that's helpful to you.
Yeah, and I think it's how we're viewing it, because if for board members, if you open it as a book, there's an option there to open the book, then the page number that Jack is referencing is Sandra's assignment, as opposed to trying to download each individual link or document that's there. Are Sandra and Sandra, are you able to see the same documents we see?
Yeah, but I opened the documentation last night and I printed it. So
okay.
And
so,
and the what I printed was M as in Monica, O N 00014 and 15.
So this is Jack Confer. I don't want to get mixed up with page number. Sandra, we are talking about your handwritten sheet from the 16th.
That's correct. That's what I'm talking about as well.
Perfect.
Okay, so for, did you say 274, right, Jeff?
That's my page number, yes.
That's the page I see it on as well. Board members, are you looking at Sandra's written assignment? Starts at the top, it says respiratory therapy assignment.
It's loading.
This is Vice Chairman Crawford. I was able to open it up in the book, like you had recommended, and was able to find it on page 274.
Perfect. And Kathy, yours is loading?
Yes, it's open. I just need to get to the page now.
Okay. And Michael, how about you? Are you able to see it?
I'm not able to see it.
Okay.
So, Jack, this is Vice Chairman Crawford. I apologize. I know I've heard you say it before. Walk me through what it is I'm looking at on page 274, please.
So my understanding from talking with RCP Walker yesterday is that this is the assignment, and RCP Walker, please jump in if I misstate something. This is the assignment sheet that she used that morning to divvy up the patients between herself and the student. My understanding is that the handwritten times in the left-hand column are RCP Walker's handwritten times when she saw those patients. So that first page, if you see it, it has a first at the top of the page in the header. And
yeah.
On the right hand side by the notes. My understanding from her explanation is that the first is for the first round and the second is for the second round. It is undetermined at this particular time whether all those handwritten notes and patient records are RCP Walker's only or RCP Walker's and the students. I have not been able to determine that. So this is her workflow for that morning.
Okay, so then I would ask RCP Walker if you could explain this page to us. That might be helpful for us.
This is the usual assignment sheet that we receive at the beginning of our shifts. I did state this yesterday. It is my handwriting, but it is the information that I received from the student and also from the patients that I did myself, because I'm the one that charts, and I'm the one that charted this particular information.
Madam Chair, this is Vice Chairman Crawford. If you don't mind, I'd like to ask a couple of questions. RCP Walker, please identify for me, what is the 730 that is 0730 that is documented on the left hand side of the patient CC?
That's the time that the first rounds were done for this particular patient.
And if I'm understanding this correctly, define for me, please, what ATC 35% means.
Aerosol trait color, 35% of oxygen.
And PMV?
Means that the patient was put on a PMV, that the PMV is yes.
And what does PMV define? What is that an acronym for?
Pacemaker valve.
Okay. And then what is MOD thick or medium thick? What does that define?
MOD is moderate thick secretions.
Okay. And then the yes that is written there, what does that define?
That's the PMV, yes.
And what does that mean?
That the PMV was on.
Okay. And then it would appear that ATC 28%, what does that mean?
At the time that it was charted is aerosol trait color 28%.
And that was at 0730?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do we have the time in which the patient was removed from the ventilator and placed on an aerosol trait collar?
It was done at that time.
At 0730?
Correct.
Okay.
And do we have the charting that shows that, Jeff? Do you know? Well, I'm sure we do in this.
Madam Chair, members of the board, that might be an appropriate question for RCP Walker.
So where would this have been charted, RCP Walker?
We usually chart on the respiratory charting in our computers, and it states that the patient is on that particular device, in this case, aerosol trait collar, and it states the time. And the oxygen, in this case, 35% or 28%, whatever was charted, that the PMV was on, that the trach care was done, oral care was done.
Was this patient on 28% or 35%?
I believe that it was charted at 28%.
Okay, so that's what I want to find. If anyone can identify the page number of the actual charting.
This is Cynthia Poutine, if it's okay for me to jump in. On my page numbers, it's MONEMR00506 through 508 respiratory flow sheet for 2/16/2021.
Madam Chair, I have no way to match that number up with the records that we have. And
yeah, I'm trying to figure that out.
So while we're going through that, if you don't mind, I have a couple more questions for RCP Walker. This is Vice Chairman Crawford. RCP
yes.
Walker, can you walk me through what I heard you say is that the student performed this task and then you documented that this occurred, correct?
That's correct.
You documented that this patient was placed on a trach collar at 28% with, I'm assuming, 95, 76, 16. I'm assuming those are some vitals or settings.
95% is saturation, 76 heart rate, 16 respiratory rate. Correct.
Thank you. Walk me through the process of how you would how would you have traditionally removed this patient from the ventilator to place on a trach collar? Walk me through the process of doing such and what you would do from start to finish.
Usually I walk in, I look at the vent and look that all the settings are correct, that the patient is doing well. I go ahead and suction the patient. I deflate the cuff, I remove the patient from, turn the vent off. I usually do another suctioning. Then I put the patient on the trach collar and put the PMV. And notice all this time I've had the pulse ox. If the person is not on a continuous pulse ox, You know, as I walk in, I put the pulse ox on the patient's finger, and I notice that everything is okay all along. And then I go ahead and continue the process and do trach care, change the inner cannula, change the split sponge, do oral care, you know, check vitals again. And pretty much that's that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So the vitals that are documented here, this 95, 76, and 16, are those vitals that were taken after the patient had been placed on the trach collar?
Yes. Because usually the vitals, when they're on the vent, they're usually like 99 and 100%.
So what were the breath sounds for this patient? Where would I find that charted?
I don't know if you're looking at the page that they provided you, but it says breath sounds. So it's SLC is slightly coarse.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Alan, were you able to find the respiratory charting?
I'm still looking.
I know, I am too.
Just a curiosity, have we received the contract from Pima Medical Institute with Montecito Healthcare related to their clinical site contract?
Madam Chair, Board Member, Vice Chairman Crawford, we have not.
Okay, thank you. And the date that this is documented, the 9570, the date that these vitals are documented, that would have been for the 16th, correct, of February?
That's correct.
So here's the issue that I'm having, and perhaps it's just me. When I'm looking at these documents, I see date of service as 1/24 through 2/15. That could just be for the occupational therapy documentation.
Yeah, I'm having trouble finding any respiratory notes at all.
Madam Chair, Cynthia, can you provide that page number, the MON number again, please?
Yes. The respiratory flow sheet, those are MONEMR00506-508, and you're not asking for the assignment sheet, are you?
No.
No,
That's for the flow sheet, and they continue on, obviously, but that's for the 16th.
So MONEMR00506 through?
Yes, through 508. And there's page numbers, I guess, that were originally made. I mean, they're the same page numbers. There's also a page 506 of 1190 at the very bottom in a small type.
I don't know why I can't find it.
I'm not sure that we have that. I have
Is there a way I could email them to you right now, or is that not, or get them to you some other way right now?
Hang on a sec. If you just bear with us here a second, please.
RCP Walker, and while we're looking for that documentation, are you able to articulate for me the level of consciousness of this patient on February 16th when this patient at 7:30 in the morning
She was awake. She's always been awake. Not really talkative, but awake. Just I don't go to Montecito that much anymore. So on the 15th and the 16th, this patient didn't seem like very coherent as far as talking, having a conversation or anything like that. But she was awake.
Was she responsive to commands? Was she able to move her arms or articulate, needs? And when I say articulate needs, was she able to push her call light or...
No,
was she able
to
communicate in any capacity?
Not to us. At least not respiratory.
Thank you.
Okay, I found the flow sheets. So, board members, if you go to the document for us, I think it's labeled MONEMR00001 through the same beginning, 1267. It's one of our top ones. And if you scroll all the way down to the bottom with the rightmost scroll bar, there's 1,267 pages available. Now, if the attorney could one more time tell me that number 5, what did you say? 5-4?
Close. It's 506 through 508.
506. 506.
Yay.
Flow sheet. Okay.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So what we're looking at now is a respiratory flow sheet on 2/16/2021. Time of assessment was 07:30 in the morning. And it would appear this patient is...
Tracy, it's Kathy. Can you give me a page number?
It's page
508.
3 out of 1267.
508?
It starts on 503.
And 506 is where it appears to be the date in question. At least that's what I have on my side. 506 out of 1267. But when you're in that first document, Kathy, use your rightmost scroll bar to go down to the bottom where you can actually enter a page number in, if you can see that. Is everyone on that page or not yet? Did you find it yet?
No, my computer's freezing up and it doesn't want to play very well, so it's taking me a little bit longer. I got 356 was the most I have on that one, so I have to go back out to the beginning.
So it appears, if I'm understanding this correctly, at 07:30, this patient was suctioned 2 times, received moderate thick pale yellow secretions. Trach care was done at that time. A passive mirror valve was placed with the cuff deflated, according to this documentation. They did not cap or plug the trach. CPT was not applicable. Oral care was done. This patient was in a semi-Fowler's position, was awake. Skin condition was normal, clean and dry. Airway patent and emergency equipment, yes. And then there's a narrative that says the patient is stable, supine, awake, trach is in place and secure, no issues, will continue to monitor, not in respiratory distress at this time. And it appears they spent a total of 15 minutes. Now, that would be the 07:30 morning rounds. I'm looking for, where does it show me that these activities were performed by a student?
No one ever told me that I needed to chart that it was done by a student. So I never have. And I really don't think that we ever have been told that. So no, students don't chart and we don't say that it was done by a student.
Okay. Thank you.
So a student is in the room doing this care on their own and then they bring you back the information and you chart it.
Correct.
And early on in this conversation, something was mentioned about that a student is not supposed to be without direct supervision. What does that mean?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Early on when Jack was first announcing the case, he said that the student was not supposed to be removing a patient from the vent without supervision.
Well, that's what I've been trying to say is I never told her to do it and I never told her not to do it. The thing is, I really didn't remember that this patient was on the vent and needed to be changed to tricolor. But anyways, she had done it on the 15th accurately. This person had done other trachea, and I'm assuming that she had done taking from the vent to the trach before, because we have several patients at Montecito that that's the protocol, vent at night and tricolor in the morning. So like I said, on the letter that I received, it said that I verbalized and said you take her off the vent and put her on tricolor. I never verbalized it, but I never told her not to either.
Okay. So you didn't verbalize for her to do it, and you didn't verbalize for her not to. Have you ever seen her do a procedure like this before?
I had never seen her with my own eyes, no.
Because I thought the attorney mentioned that you had done this with her the day before, and she had done the same thing.
Right. She had the same patients on the day before and did the exact same things on the 15th and the 16th.
And were you her preceptor on the 15th?
Yes.
So you had the same patient on the 15th and the 16th with the same students, but you didn't know the patient was on a vent. I don't understand that part. I'm sorry.
We usually get the report in the morning. And so I didn't remember that the patient was on the vent in the morning. So when she took her off the vent, I didn't remember that the person was on the vent and that we needed to put her on the tricolor.
But isn't it written on, aren't there vent settings written on your assignment sheet?
Correct.
Madam Chair, members of the board, you asked a question about direct supervision of
yes.
Student. It's probably more appropriate to ask RCP Herrera what processes are in place, what procedures are in place to address that in her facility.
Okay, that's a fair
point. The second part of that is that my understanding, and RCP Walker can clarify, is that when the students are their assignment in the morning or night, handed a copy of the assignment sheet. They write down that copy of the assignment sheet, the various things that you've asked about. That copy is then given to the preceptor / respiratory therapist who then enters them into the EMR. It is possible, and I don't have clarification on this, but RCP Walker, RCP Herrera, or their attorney can clarify this, whether or not there was a copy of the assignment sheet that this particular and gave back to RCP Walker. That is a question mark. I don't have that or the other.
So you were kind of cutting out for some of that. The assignment sheet, okay, I need to write down this page number 5, what I'm on. If someone can remind me the assignment sheet page number. Anyone have that handy?
That is, in a full downloaded book, it's 274.
Oh, that's a different book. Gosh. Confusing with. So on that assignment sheet, which RCP Walker, you said that's your handwriting on that sheet, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And there are vent settings on that sheet, correct?
Yes, correct.
And would you not have gotten a report from the night shift therapist about the patient being on or off a vent?
Yes, that's correct. That's what I just said, that it just slipped my mind that the person was on the vent. But the student never told me that she was going to remove her from the vent to the tray collar.
But when she brought you the charting, you obviously knew that that took place, yes?
Yes, correct.
And okay, well, I want to pause on that for just a moment. And I do want to ask the supervisor, RCP Herrera, are you out there?
Yes.
Can you kind of give us your, what's the policy on students and doing activities with or without supervision?
So as the student has arrived as the first day, they're under, as I always clarify, that they are under your license and under supervision of that RT staff to have the appropriate clinical rotation. So they need to know the student's clinical rotation because there's three different rotations, so they are understanding of what they can and cannot do. And as when I sat with the schools, they would have a sheet of checkoff on what they have are able to do. So my understanding with this case that it's a ventilator rotation, so it was her last day. She has actually been checked off already by multiple RTs and staff, and as of my understanding, she was a very good student and had the knowledge of the ventilators. So my knowledge, when she was already have taken off, she was still act under the RT's license under the supervision, but not directly have to be inside the room 24/7 with that RT.
Okay.
They also could go with other RTs on that, or myself, that they multiple do when we are acting in other type of scenarios, trick changes, anything they could actually learn, they jump to other RTs as well.
Okay. You mentioned that the students are working under the license of the practitioner at your facility, correct?
Yes. So they would discuss, they would get the reporting, what they're due for the day, should they be getting with their RTs to discuss that situation, that patient, go over anything they have done or didn't do, and that would be, again, discussed between that student and that RT.
Okay. Do the RCPs at your facility understand that when a student is assigned to them, that they're working under their license?
Yes.
Okay. RCP Walker, are you on board with everything that RCP Herrera has said so far?
Yes.
Okay. So my concern or confusion is on the 15th, when you and the student had the patient, that this same event seemed to take place. And then, but you're saying on the 16th, when you and the same student had the same patient, you didn't know the patient was on a vent, or you forgot she was on a vent, and you didn't tell her to take the patient off or not take the patient off. But when the student brought you the charting, you clearly knew that something was done with this patient. And I guess my confusion is if this student is working under your license, wouldn't it be beneficial to you to know what's going on with these patients?
Well, I didn't say that I didn't know that I didn't know what was going on with this patient. Because obviously on the 15th, I did know that she was on the vent. She did remove the person from the vent. She had the skills that she had competency removing somebody from the vent to the tray collar. The reason that I said the 16th is because the whole scenario, this whole incident occurred on the 16th. So that's why I emphasized the 16th. But on the 15th, when she removed the patient from the vent to the tray collar, she did a good job. So I didn't see why it would have to be different on the 16th, even though I skipped on my knowledge that she was on the vent, removing her from the vent to the tray collar. But I didn't. What I'm trying to say is that the letter that I received, I said to go ahead and do it. I didn't say go ahead and do it, but I didn't say not to. She had done it on the 15th as well. And yes, I know that she was under my license.
Okay. And you watched her do it on the 15th, or you did not watch her?
I did not.
Okay.
Because she had many days at Montecito.
Okay.
Doing this kinds of stuff.
Okay. Other questions, board members, for any of the RCPs or the attorney?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
It's Jack Confer. I just want to clarify in my mind, I have one quick question for RCP Herrera, if that's okay.
Sure.
RCP Herrera, you responded to a question from Chairman Kagan about whether or not students are working independently or under the supervision of an RT. The question was, what policies and procedures are in place besides the initial competencies from the school that you have to make sure that students can see patients independently? And do you have any documentation that the competencies that they're seeing these patients for have been checked off?
So under the RT that they're assigned with, do a shared rotation and check off that RT that their initial assignment is. They normally, as I gather information as well as myself that was a student and been with students, you would check off those students by vision. Does not mean each and every single RT.
Look, I apologize. This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. You just cut out there. It seemed like a really important moment. I apologize. You could just restate what you just said.
Myself?
Yes, please.
Under the respiratory, on when we check off students, we communicate with the students on the rotation. So, for example, if it's the vent rotations, we will check them off on the vent clinical, basic vent check, suctioning via inline, tracer off of ventilator patients. If there's a patient that comes on and off the ventilator, we normally have them watch us walk us through it and visually them helping assist the patient as well. Each RT holds their license, so if they're comfortable of having the student checked off on that under their care, they let them check off under their care. And then if they feel confident and comfortable, that'd be under their discretion to let the student do it.
Thank you for answering that. One follow-up question. Who checked off on this particular student and when?
So this student was with multiple staff of day shifts that I feel very comfortable and confident and trustworthy. And also prior, a few days prior, she was actually with myself as well. And she was asking me questions, just as simple thing as a drain sponge and saying that, oh, well, how do you do that? I do my work differently. Each and every RT has their own skill sets and how we perform our care. She watched me the whole entire day. I watched her. We were together. We, as being a director, have multitasked, not just on the floor. Unfortunately, there's events where I have to cover the floor when I do not have her. She was with me. Also, there's many times that she's been there for weeks that she comes in and asks questions. I answer her questions. She's in the office, and I show her equipment. How is this set up? I have multiple vents in there. Again, the students, I'm a very big educationer, so if they have questions, I love to be with them and talk to them. So with her, I actually saw her work as well, and she did a great job. I mean, I highly did one love as the RT. My staff was very vocal and very experienced. If they had any questions or concern on the students, but not at all hold any type of feedback towards me. If there's any indication they do not feel like you should be here, they will let me know.
Thank you. Thank you for answering that. When you were looking at these records, when this event occurred, was there another patient in the same room?
Yes.
Thank you.
Back at the charting on page 506, that happened at 7:30. I think we're all in agreement that was the charting at 7:30. On your assignment sheet, you say, or I can't see the assignment sheet right now, but you said, I think you said it's 7:40. Well, someone said at 7:40, someone went in and removed the from the vent, placed on the trach, I assume a collar, and at 7:50, respiratory care ended. So someone was in there from 7:30 to 7:50 or 7:40 to 7:50?
I don't know what you're talking about, 7:40. Trach care was done at 7:30 for 15 minutes. I think the attorney had said something about 7:40. I'm not really sure.
Okay.
I think you might have heard that from me. There's a timeline set forth in the progress notes, and I can give you those page numbers. But the timeline is that 7:30, the RT student was providing care. 7:40, a nurse came in and observed suctioning and gave meds. And then I said between 7:45 and 7:50, the care ended, because I knew that it was approximately 15 minutes. So I was kind of giving an approximation of 7:45 to 7:50 when the RT care ended, and then the code started at 8:40.
Okay.
Or thereabouts. It could be 8:43, 8:42. But the 8:40 was when Ms. Walker learned that a code was being called.
Okay.
I'm sorry, what time was that? What time was the code?
The code was 8:40.
RCP Walker, this is Vice Chairman Crawford. Can you tell me, was this patient receiving any respiratory medication?
One moment, I have to look at my assignment. I had to charge my phone. One second, please. No, she wasn't. She had a PRN ProAir that was not given because it is PRN.
Okay, but no scheduled respiratory meds. I'm looking at page 67 of the 1,267-page document. This appears to be what I would call a medication administration record. On this page, I'm very interested in knowing there is what appears to be a medication that is documented via G-tube. At 12 o'clock, there's the number 2 with some initials there. I'm very curious what that indicates. If the code was actually at 08:40 in the morning, I think it's a little strange that we're continuing to give medications to this patient.
What page?
At 12 o'clock. That's at page 67 of the 1,267-page document. This is not this does not appear to be a respiratory medication, in my opinion. It's just very odd.
I can speak to that. This is Cynthia Patain. The EMRs are such that when care is not provided or when care is put on hold, the person will put a number 2. And there's a little key. It should be at the bottom of that record. I'm actually not looking at the record right now, but
I
know what
it says. Hold. Yeah. It says hold / the nurse's note. Yeah.
So that's helpful in interpreting that, and it was apparently on hold.
Great. Thank you.
My concern is, as a practicing RT, when you're practicing in the hospital and you're a preceptor, you know that the student is working under your license, and you know that every patient that they are taking care of, you are responsible for lack of a better word. And while I understand that a student may be close to graduation and they can go in and do some things and just bring you the charting and then you do it, I feel like as the RCP assigned to that patient, there's some responsibility about knowing whether the patient's okay or not okay.
I don't disagree with you, Chairman Kagan.
That's correct. I never said that I didn't know that the patient was not okay. At the time that the code was called, I was talking to the nurse in front of room 228 because that patient was giving us problems as far as she was having difficulties with the vent. I had to call other RTs to help me out. I was talking to the nurse for that particular patient at the time that the code was called, and so I could not assist the patient. I didn't have time to go and see this patient that we're talking about, because 228 was having issues of her own. And as Ms. Herrera can tell you, I had to call RTs a couple of times to help me with her because she was pitching. We had the trach was dislodged. Anyways, there were several issues, and I was talking to the nurse when somebody said the code was called. So it's not that I didn't know that the patient, that I don't take care of my patients. I had to take care of another patient while this was going on, even prior.
So, RCP Walker, you said you were standing in front of patient room 228, and correct me if I'm wrong, the patient in question is in room 246, correct?
One moment.
The patient that patient initial CC was in room 246?
I believe patient CC was in 235B, Vice Chair Crawford. I may be wrong, though.
Yeah, it's 235B. My printout is a little faded. It's 235B.
Oh, 235. Okay. Interesting. It clearly says document. This document that I'm looking at on page 69 clearly says that this patient's in room 246. But you said 235?
She did have a room change, so that's probably the old documentation.
Okay, so at the time that the code was called, where was patient CC located? What room number?
50.
I'm sorry, you cut out there. Say it again.
50. Right up front, the nursing station.
I believe you said 235B. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then the RCP Walker was in front of 228. Can you explain to me the distance between 228 and 235?
It's a hallway. Then there's I don't know how to explain it in feet, but it's a hallway. And then there's a nurse's station. And then past the nurse's station is the room of the deceased.
Okay. RCP Herrera, I want to back up to your comment. I want to make sure that I understood you correctly, and if it's okay, I'm going to provide a summary of what I interpreted you saying, and please correct me if I'm not correct in my understanding. What I heard you say is that when students are assigned to Montecito, that they would be, you as the manager or leader, would assign the student to an RCP for the shift. Is that accurate?
No, because they're there before I enter the building. My schedule is totally different through the RTs. They're scheduled through 12, so there's an impossible way for me to be there every single day, every single shift to assign them. So they are assigned by the RTs on the floor to one another, and the RTs on the floor, they're not forced to have students, so they also... the ones that do not feel comfortable taking students or newer, then that could be based off of the acting in charge RT for that shift.
Okay, so there's a lead or essentially a senior RT that would assign that student, correct, to an RCP?
Yes, and volunteer for our RT staff as well, like I said. Some don't feel comfortable taking students, so I ask them politely, if you do not feel comfortable taking students, you're not forced, just let me know so it's not getting any, like, making the students feel uncomfortable. So there are actual RT therapists that love taking students, so they will volunteer to take them as well. And also the lead RT or the senior RT, if the students sitting in the room, they will assign them.
And then what I heard you say is that whoever the assigned RCP is, the licensee, would then be responsible for performing competency checkoffs or evaluations of the care being provided by the student?
Evaluations, yes. They would do together, and they would check them off and explain. And again, this is their clinical, so it's all educational, so they'd be with them until they are checking them off. And also explaining, and again, the students that I have witnessed have come here, they're always asking questions.
Okay, and how often would you say, would it be a common practice that students would, once deemed competent or once having had that evaluation, would those students be permitted to provide care without direct supervision? What I mean by direct is having a licensee at the bedside with the student?
If they have the competency of themselves and their schooling, I don't see their need for someone to be right next to them during each and every care. And again, it's also the RT that is under their supervision that's overseeing that student.
Okay. And how does that align with the contract that Montecito has with Pima Medical Institute for a clinical site?
Our clinical site, again, what my understanding was, the students come in. Again, like I told the school that they're responsible for their, if they're coming in or not coming in. I don't keep track of their call-offs or anything like that. When they come in, they will have a check-off with their criticals. So my understanding with the school, they have to have a form, and their form they would keep with them. So they would say they're allowed first clinicals, doing trach care and suctioning. This would identify the student that their knowledge before even entering my school, what they're allowed to do. And our policy and what I had told them since we're in a COVID time right now, I did let them know our policy. So when they do step in here, they would still have to follow our policy procedures as our normal respiratory therapists would do under our policy and our care under our responsibilities as well that was provided. So checking orders, understanding what they're doing, questions, they still have to follow doctor orders. They would have to still act just under our policies as well. And whatever the school recommends them to do with their check-off before they're entering, what they're allowed to do.
Thank you. Hey, Jack, just a request to the board staff. I'd like to subpoena Pima Medical Institute for a copy of that contract as a clinical site for Montecito. My concern is that I'm not confident that the practices that RCP Herrera just explained are going to match the contract, so I'd just like to verify that.
Madam Chair, Vice Chairman Crawford, I will happily do that. I'd like to probably talk with Seamus first. Is it part and parcel to this investigation, or do you want to check the contract for all students that are going?
Specifically am interested in this in regards to this investigation.
Okay. Thank
what
you.
What I heard RCP Herrera state is that students arrive to their facility. Students are then identified to a preceptor or licensee at Montecito, and that students may be permitted, once evaluated and deemed competent, to provide care, that they may render care without having direct or immediate oversight, such as having another licensee in the room to supervise the student.
Yeah,
and I'm curious if that aligns with what the contract says.
And they're under that RT. So again, I don't have control over every single respiratory. And for sitting here saying that they're not allowed to go in the room to get a SAS or check a breath sound by themselves, that would probably be understood what you're just taking my words, I feel. Because it could be something of putting drink sponge in the patient's room. I'm not going to call the student. Or just a simple thing of putting a pulse ox on the patient's finger. I'm going to feel comfortable, or I'm most likely have begun every RT, but feel comfortable for them to do so. For me telling you what I personally will let a student do or not do under my license, that's going to be under me, and that's going to be under my care, because I'm really very, very involved, so each and every person will be probably answer that question directly different for you. But as of right now, the policies is they are under that respiratory care.
Then I understand. I have another question. This is the Chairman Kagan. Do you, and this is for RCP Herrera, I think, at this point, do you get anything from the school, and maybe you said this, and if you did, I apologize, from the school or the student that, like a checkoff that they bring you that says, yes, I'm competent to do this variety of things?
They keep those papers. It's not given to us. They have it and they sign off. This is school related. And again, under like me, just because a prescription says that person's okay, I'm sure that you validate that or that student. form, but they hold on to those papers, and those are what they have for their schools.
And they brought those from their school, showing that they had competency checkoffs there.
As I was told when I sat down before all even ever took a student, they have to have that form. And again, I don't personally go and check the forms. I'm not on site every single time these students are here, but they would have to have those forms.
Okay.
As by their school.
So, I guess kind of as a, not even a side note to all this, but I would be curious if this student had done her checkoffs and been competently released to do them from the school level.
Madam Chair, members of the board, to supplement your questions and some of the testimony, I had the opportunity to meet with the folks at Pima Medical Institute. They were very concerned. They were very helpful. At that time, I did ask that questions if the competencies had been checked off, and I was told that they were, that students don't leave any to any clinical rotations unless those competencies have been handled and checked off. So I'm happy to subpoena the documents. But when I was asking those questions, I felt comfortable with the responses that we were getting, that I was getting from the school. I don't know if that helps or not.
Yeah, it does. I guess my concern, well, among other things, is, so I understand the timeline, and now we've gotten to 8:40 and this patient is coding, and somehow there's question about whether the cuff was inflated or deflated. And I think it was the attorney who said that someone told an RT to inflate the cuff, therefore it must have been deflated. That's not an accurate statement, and I can't be on board with the cuff was deflated because they asked the question. I don't know how we know whether this cuff was actually inflated or deflated.
Chairman Kagan, I thought there was documentation that the cuff was deflated at the time that the pacemaker valve was placed, based on the RT document, and I apologize, I lost my page number, so give me a second and I will go find it.
Vice Chair Crawford, that was page 506, I believe, was the flow chart you were looking for?
Yeah, but it doesn't say the cuff's deflated or inflated.
It does say deflated.
Where's that?
On page 506 of the 1,267-page document.
Uh-huh.
If you scroll down, I'm now on page 507.
Uh-huh. It's cuffed. Intercannulate is changed.
Keep going. So section C on page 508, it says PMV cuff/cuff deflated, yes.
Okay. Trait care done, yes. Okay, but this charting, yeah, okay, so the charting says it was, right. But the person who charted it did not do the care.
Chair Kagan, this is Seamus Monahan again. I apologize for jumping in. I did want to point out, though, that, you know, the as was pointed out earlier, the complaint we got was anonymous, whereas, you know, the charting we're getting as well, you know, we're getting from the parties, it's indicating something, you know. So I just want to make sure we give both the same weight.
And I understand that. My thing is the person who did the charting didn't perform the care. So, yes, we've charted that the cuff is deflated, but the person who charted the cuff was deflated didn't actually deflate the cuff.
That is correct. I would agree with that. I would agree with that statement.
That's
where
I'm
having a problem. That is my concern as well.
I can chart anything anybody tells me. That doesn't mean it's accurate and that it really happened.
So, this is Vice Chairman Crawford. I think that I have many concerns related to our discussion today related to this case. I think, Chairman Kagan, I agree with the statement that you've made. I'm not confident yet that I think we need to gather some more information, in my opinion. I would like to see the contract with Pima Medical Institute. I also would like to interview the student, if possible. I also heard that there was a
subpoena them. I apologize.
I'm sorry, Seamus, I didn't hear you say that again.
I just meant to add, you can always subpoena the student. They don't have to show, but we could try to enforce that in court if they choose not to show.
So, if more information, and I don't disagree.
Tracy, you're cutting out real bad.
Gosh, what is going on with these calls? Everyone else cut out, too. I think at this point, if more information is what we're going to want, I think the decision is to be made on the summary suspension. Is that correct, Jack?
Madam Chair, yes. If the board, and I'm not trying to be your attorney here, I would like the board to decide whether or not they think, from the evidence they heard, this rises to the level of a summary suspension or not. If not, I would ask the board to, if they think there are violations of statute or rule, send it along in the process somehow. I will tell you that I interviewed the student. The student was also interviewed by Pima Medical Institute. I do not think that having the student in front of the board and having the board ask the student questions is going to be beneficial to decide whether or not there is a violation of state statute or rule at this time, unless something changes. So that's just me giving you some insight that you may be able to find something out that I haven't been able to. But from my recommendation from the staff level is that you, from what I've heard, you may have violations that are in the area of record keeping. You may have violations about whether or not an unlicensed person completed the practice of respiratory care. But as far as the main allegation that we got on the online portal, I'm not sure we're going to be able to prove or disprove that at this time. I am happy to gather whatever information that I can to do in that decision.
Jack, is there a transcript of the conversation that Pima Medical Institute had with the student?
I have my notes, and I did not record it. And there is a transcript / recording available from when Pima Medical Institute talked with the student. I will tell you that my conversation with the student, as well as their conversation with the student, are almost exactly the same fact pattern and the exact same responses. And what you will most likely hear is that the student went in, removed it from the vent, did the trach care before and after the removal of the med, said she put the patient on, I think, correct my terminology, the speaking valve.
Yeah.
And that she remained in that patient room for 10 to 15 minutes after she had completed that. That was the verbal testimony. I have been able to verify times between her testimony and the patient records. And one other thing, while I respond to that, I do know that we have one board member that will have a conflict here in about 5 minutes, so we will lose our quorum in that. We need to get wrapped up quick.
Okay, thank you. Board members, does anyone else have any questions, any thoughts, any concerns, well, other than what we've discussed? Any suggestions?
Cynthia, do you have anything to add for your clients?
No, I think that you've covered everything that we know at this point in time, and I know that absent, if
If the board is inclined to vote for summary suspension today, I know that both of the respiratory therapists would be willing to agree to not supervise students. If that's at all helpful in lieu of a complete summary suspension, perhaps that's a compromise if there are concerns, and that would satisfy those concerns, it seems. So that's something to think about, if that's appropriate at this point.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. While I appreciate that comment, the board doesn't have the authority to ask them not to supervise people unless they order something. And to order something, unless we do it in the form of a consent agreement, would require evidence and your party's acquiescence to it. So it sounds like to me at this point from Jack and the rest of the board that there may be violations that have been seen, and that it would be prudent to either move this to a formal interview or to stay in a holding pattern for one more month until the next meeting, and then have an initial review of the case. Those could be a couple options that you could go down towards. And if you chose a formal interview, I could always work on a consent agreement with the individuals involved in this matter during that time.
So that's an interesting thought. Are there options other than, because I thought at this point our option was to, we're either here to summarily suspend the license or to not.
No, you have the authority to move the case forward. You also have the authority to issue any non-disciplinary orders at this point.
But not disciplinary, because we'd have to be in a formal hearing for that, or an informal with her presence.
Exactly.
Okay.
So if you were to summarily suspend, we would have to hold the hearing within 60 days, and the summary suspension would constitute our findings of fact and conclusions of law.
And if we chose not to suspend, we can move it forward how?
You can either move it forward to the informal interview, or you can keep it at the investigative stage and set it for an initial review at the board's next meeting, subject to, Mr. Comfort being able to get a couple things that you may still want.
Sure. Okay. All right, board members, I want to make sure everyone understands the different options we have on the table as we are running short on time for our quorum. And I don't want to rush it because we're running short on our time for our quorum. So if there's more questions or concerns or things we need to talk about, let's make sure that that happens.
This is Vice Chairman Crawford. I am in favor of moving this to a formal hearing. I want to make sure, however, that Jack would have the opportunity to obtain contract from Pima Medical Institute, and
was that a formal interview, Vice Chair Crawford?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Did you mean a formal interview and not a formal hearing?
It's an informal interview or a formal hearing.
Correct. It would be. I need to be in a place where I can have time to gather more facts.
Formal interview.
Prior to making a decision, whether that decision be disciplinary or non-disciplinary.
Absolutely, and I think then you would need to go with the formal interview.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm going to repeat that real quick. So Vice Chairman Crawford made a motion to refer this to a formal interview, and has directed staff to issue a subpoena to get contract documents from Pima Medical Institute. Is that correct?
That is correct. And if I'll get a second. I'll get a second, and then I have a question for you, Jack.
And before that, is the motion based on the factual allegations and the potential violations of law as stated in the investigatory report and the statements made today?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So do we have a second to that?
Board Member Beller, second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second, so now we can have some discussion on it.
So, Jack, my question is, in addition to that subpoena for the contract from Pima Medical Institute, if we are able to, instead of bringing the student in front of the board, are we able to if we have questions, can we have you ask the student those questions?
Absolutely.
Okay, so my question about this motion, and this will go to you, Vice Chairman Crawford, is you are an informal interview without suspension.
At this time, that is correct.
Okay, I want to make sure everyone understands the motion. Okay, so we have a motion, we have a second. Do we have any further discussion? Jack, I'm going to ask that you do a roll call vote, please.
Okay, Vice Chairman Crawford.
Aye.
Chairman Kagan.
Aye.
Board Member Reinier.
Aye.
And Board Member Beller.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Motion carries is right.
So this matter will be scheduled at a future board meeting. And staff's been directed to issue a subpoena and ask some additional questions, possibly to the student that's involved. Just want to thank everybody for taking the time today. Cynthia, thank you. RCP Herrera and RCP Walker, thank you for your time today. We very much appreciate it. Motion to adjourn the meeting.
Yep, I don't have a gavel on my end, but meeting adjourned at 1:30.
All right, thank you. Wonderful job today, board.